Hey, America.
Start listening now. Hey, Sam, I got a question.
What's up, Danny?
This episode is going to be about intervals and interval acts, and I just want to ask, like, what is the big thing about interval acts?
That is a fantastic question, Danny. But before I give you an answer, here's an unrelated musical interlude.
Oh, God, we're back. Hi. Hey, welcome. Welcome back to 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, the country that brought you the acclaimed movie The Hunger Games, as well as the acclaimed book The Hunger Games. I am Eric.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny.
And as Danny said, this episode we are talking about interval acts. So Eurovision has dozens of songs every year, but since the beginning, it has been tradition to also include other songs. So we're going to be talking about those.
So I had the chance earlier today to reach out on social media. So on Twitter, you can reach us at 12pointsUSA. It's also where we are on Facebook. You can email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com, or just check out our website at 12pointsfromamerica.com. Very cool. Anyway, I asked some of our followers what their favorite interval acts have been. And there have been a couple that really kind of rose to the top. People are saying Hothouse Flowers performing in 1988. People from the 1996 interval, which is a bit of a classic. Love, Love, Peace, Peace, which we're going to talk about today.
That's the one I know, so yeah.
And of course, Riverdance. These are all...
And of course,
Riverdance. Yes. Yeah. But we're going to kind of dive in a little bit. We have a whole bunch of followers that are new to the podcast this week. First and foremost, welcome. Really happy to have you here.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
If you are listening for the very first time and literally have no idea what we are talking about, might I recommend you check out our fifth episode, which we lovingly call Everybody Down the Eurovision Hole.
Mm-hmm. That's the one where we talk about how each of us individually got into Eurovision as a whole.
Yeah.
To fall into. Yes, 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 yes.
You said the thing.
So, welcome to the family. Yeah. Keep the conversation going. We'd love to have you.
Listen to that one and join us in the hole.
And maybe send us some snacks.
First things first, let's do what news we have of upcoming Eurovision.
We are
Eurovision yet to come.
Yeah, we are still waiting. We're still waiting on a lot of news. We do have word that we'll hear officially the announcement of the host city.
We knew by this point we wouldn't have it this week.
No, exactly, exactly. August 30th will supposedly be the magic day when we know if we are heading to Rotterdam or to Maastricht.
It's going to be Rotterdam.
Maastricht!
Rotterdam!
Maastricht!
Rotterdam!
Okay.
Going to be awkward.
Take that.
It's going to be fine either way. It's either a 40-minute train from the major international airport or a three-hour train from the major international airport.
I like trains.
Everybody wins.
Yeah.
Especially national infrastructure. Huzzah. But other than that, we really are just kind of waiting. It's sort of the quiet season at this point.
It is.
Well, we did find out about our presenting sponsor for next year.
True. Very, very true. Last year, we saw a whole bunch of branding from MyHeritage, a genealogy site based in Israel. For Eurovision 2020, the big sponsor that we just found out today is Moroccan Oil, which is a...
For real?
It's a hair oil product.
Doing Moroccan Oil?
Yeah.
All right.
Hair product, which is pretty cool.
Are we going to get some impressive... I mean, we're going to be in the Netherlands, so are we going to get some impressive coiffs?
I would imagine so. Either that or...
All I have to do is just bring Dana International again.
Either that or everybody's going to be bald just to mess with them.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Are we going to get like interesting chyrons about people's hair during the performances?
Oh, God.
So like...
Oh, like the bumpers before like they actually
Yeah,
go
where they show
the
like so-and-so found out that she's 25% Italian or whatever.
Yeah.
And... Next year, it's going to say so-and-so found out that her split ends are terrible.
Right.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
That's good. That's it. That's all we know.
I hope the interval act is going to be a live slavering of Moroccan oil onto, I don't know, who's a famous Dutch? Michiel Huisman from Game of Thrones. We're going to slather Moroccan oil on
It's going to be like an Herbal Essences commercial.
Ooh. Ooh. Parental guidance suggested.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Other than that, the other only other news that's kind of floated in the past are our respective eyeballs this past week. Got a little bit more information on the Will Ferrell starring Netflix special that's about right. Eurovision.
The Netflix movie about Eurovision, yeah. Starring Americans.
Yeah.
And Pierce Brosnan.
And evidently, Will Ferrell, Rachel McAdams, and Pierce Brosnan are playing Icelanders, because that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Time will tell if this is a loving homage to our favorite international song competition or a skewering.
It's a skewer. Will Ferrell. Yes, yeah. A loving movie made by Will Ferrell.
Yeah. We'll see.
I will not write out Stranger Than Fiction, but it's been 14 years.
I was telling Sam I really don't know about this movie. And just sort of ask, like, what was the figure skating community response to Blades of Glory?
Yes.
That's whatever that was is probably how I'm going to feel about it. If they liked it, then I guess maybe it'll be fine.
Do we know what the movie is called?
I think it's just called Eurovision.
I think so, yeah.
At least it's the working title. Yikes. I don't know if that's being changed.
It better be a different thing. What if it's 12 Points from America?
Oh, God. We had it first.
So we have the proof.
I'll get our lawyer on the phone right now.
Lovely.
Actually, before we do go on, I have a announcement to make. We have a new addition to the 12 Points from America family, and it is a brand spanking new tea towel. Yeah. I would sell the tea towel to say something, but, you know, it's an inanimate object. But,
it's great to be on the show!
Come on, Danny. You're an actor. This is yes, and
that wasn't me. That was the tea towel.
But
Danny wasn't saying that. He wasn't even here.
Designed by my very dear friend Ellie Chalkley from ESC Insight. You can find her stuff at Etsy. That would be Etsy.com. Totally flagulous. Where she has all sorts of really fantastic Eurovision-based swag, tea towels and art and felted buttons, and she's just, one, a great friend, and two, just a great person, great designer. So if you're in the mood for some Eurovision swag, including some tea towels, which they might be sold out, but they'll be coming back soon. Good job, Ellie. We love you.
Give Ellie your money.
Yes.
Was absolutely flagulous taken? Was that the problem? It may have been. I see. All right. It was like, it was staring her in the face. How did it?
I know. Yeah, but totally flagulous.
This is a great tea towel, though. Like, this, if you go on at least to her Etsy page and take a look at this, this thing looks great. I could get lost for at least 60 years.
Yeah, it literally is decorated with every literal Eurovision result ever. Every country, every year, how they did in the end. It's really very impressive.
You've never experienced a more hypnotic grid.
I've never been so excited about a kitchen.
Top 10 tea towels with an interesting grid. This one's at least number 2.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Good on you, Ellie. Good on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, the reason that we are all here today, other than just to gawk at my tea towel, that's not a euphemism. We are here to chat Interval X.
Chat Interval X.
Yeah. It's an underrated part of the show that recently has been getting a lot of attention.
I think it's properly rated. I think it is a properly admired and looked at section of the show.
It averages out to be fine.
I think as far as sections of the show are concerned,
yeah.
I mean, this is not only a break for the performers and the juries and the voters, but it really is almost like the literal perfect opportunity for like bathroom break for like everyone else who has just been sitting on the couch for 2.5 hours watching.
Oh yeah.
I'm glad for the interval myself when it happens.
Refill your tea.
Yes.
Have a quick nip to the loo.
Mm-hmm.
And you're back in time for the voting.
Here's something that I did not know when we were doing just a little bit of planning for this episode. I did not know that there was an interval act at the very first Eurovision.
Yeah, it started really, really early.
So that the 8-man jury could deliberate for 2 minutes.
it seemed...
came back with a verdict of not guilty. So everyone was spared that.
Now this is a remake of 12 Angry Men.
Yes.
I needed to see.
Who was it that, remind us where it was?
The very first Eurovision, so
was
1956, it was in Switzerland, and it was won by Switzerland. So
rigged!
Maybe.
Was the Interval Act also Switzerland?
All of it. The entire nation of Switzerland. No, it was Le Joyeux Rossignol and Les Trois Ménestrels, according to Wikipedia.
That's right.
French is abysmal. But yeah, they actually did have an interval act. Unfortunately, the 1956 contest has been lost to time, that no recording really exists anymore. Yeah, maybe it was good. Who knows? There was no interval act in the 57 contest, but it seems like every other contest from 58 onward has had some form of an interval, whether it's a local orchestra playing or a local clown doing a bit.
All right. Get the clown out. Yep. Get the clown out. Does he have 6 minutes of material? He does not. All right. We're putting him on anyway.
Yep.
If I know Eurovision interval, that's...
You can do one balloon animal. You can do 8 balloon animals. Now get to work.
This one's a snake, and this one's a worm.
This one's a sword. It doesn't have a hilt, but it's a sword.
It's a sword.
I promise.
Javelin. But yeah, it was pretty much a sort of state event until, for some odd reason, 1963, and they went a little bit weird. It was hosted in London, and they had Ola and Barbro, who were a pair of, how do you put it?
Like acrobats?
Yes, cycling acrobats. Because what else do you do in BBC Television Center?
The fantastic thing about this interval act, just from watching the clip, which is readily available on YouTube, is that they are doing these unicycle and bicycle acrobatics in a constant circle because the stage set is so small. We're treated to modern Eurovisions where it's like a proper arena stage, but this is honestly like the size of 2 living rooms. Is they're just doing constant circles. It is impressive. It is impressive, and everyone out there should watch it. But I just have to wonder if they had to take Dramamine before this, because they are doing like 10-foot circles the entire time.
Leave the stage and promptly toss their cookies. Too many circles. Too many circles.
The things they do for art.
Exactly. Another really interesting early interval act. Gotta give a shout out to 1974.
Yes,
we do. All right.
This is a legendary year for, you know, because this is the ABBA year.
Yes, this is the year that ABBA won. So it's the Eurovision that on some level everyone knows, sort of. But this was held in Brighton, on the south coast of the UK, because the UK had... they had not won. Luxembourg won. Luxembourg was like, nah, pass.
Where are we going to host it? In our castle?
Yeah.
So they said,
so the UK was like, fine, and then they did. The Interval Act in 1974 was a novelty pop band called... The Wombles. Now, all the youngins out there probably don't know.
I do not.
The Wombles.
I do not know who the Wombles is.
I am.
Who is the Wombles?
Why is Wombles? So, it started as a children's book series. Then it was a children's TV show, and then it became like a touring thing. Like it was the Wiggles.
Almost like the Wiggles.
It was the Wiggles of the 70s, except they dressed up like these weird creatures, like a
Wiggles
like
meets Moomins.
Meets really?
Something like that. Something
like that. Tubby monsters. I don't know. Are we gonna? Is this like Is it like Mr. Blobby, the person that Jack Whitehall is terrified of?
Not as horrifying as Mr. Blobby.
Okay.
Yeah, dressed up like weird, almost Muppet-like monsters, except they weren't puppets. They were people in costumes. Anyway, they were the Interval Act in 1974,
BBC selected, decided to thrust upon the viewing audience the Wombles.
Yeah.
And what was it?
It was weird, you guys. It was super weird. And it's nice that we still have a Eurovision after that. So thanks, ABBA, for overshadowing the Wombles. I also want to point out, I'm just looking at the Wombles Wikipedia page. In 2011, they played Glastonbury.
Ooh, nice. Back to back with, like, Jason Mraz and
the Verve reunion.
They packed stage two.
I think it's like, I guarantee you that some of our British listeners right now are probably looking at their screens or whatever they're listening to us on and fuming. How can these American Philistines not know about the glory of
the Wombles are?
That just completely passed us by. And maybe for the
moment. I mean, what did we... In the 70s, we had the Elektra company. We didn't need the Wombles.
Yeah, we were fine.
Womble.
Just want to note that Remember You're a Womble, a song by the Wombles.
By the Wombles,
from 1974. This was like at the peak of their popularity, it seems.
The height of Womble.
Reached number 3 in the UK. Wombling Merry Christmas reached number 2. Came very, very close to getting that coveted number one spot. But it was no Killing in the Name. Didn't get that number one.
You know what? I was going to say that I was shocked and surprised by this, but what can I say? Crazy Frog's Axel F came to number 1 in the UK. So, like, nothing shocks me anymore.
Yeah, so stop judging us, United Kingdom. It's okay. You can judge us as long as you keep listening. And
why we fought for our independence was so you could judge us.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Now, before we move any further, one of the things that we were talking about is that interval acts can be pretty much split into 2 categories.
Yeah, we were chatting about this.
Just thing. 2 general themed categories. One is sort of like highlighting the cultural strengths of the host nation.
Mm.
And then the other category is... just bring in a ringer? What do we got in this other second half?
I like to think of it as cultural, you know, showing off the host nation versus referential.
Yes.
Yeah, so interval acts about the contest itself. And now that we've got over 60 years of history, there's a lot to pick from.
Yes.
And sometimes that involves bringing in Eurovision veterans. Sometimes the cultural and the referential squish together in the sense of sometimes Eurovision veterans will sing songs in the style of the host country, which happened in 2012 in Azerbaijan for a semifinal. Where they had a whole bunch of Eurovision stalwarts singing their songs with a traditional Azerbaijani orchestra. And it kind
which
of...
which consists of?
Azerbaijan. Nars and things. And
do they have ouds?
Ouds and...
oodles of ouds?
Oodles of ouds.
Wow.
Oodles of zoodles of ouds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't know?
Yep. So some of the most popular interval acts over the last couple of years, you know, especially because, like I said, we've got over 60 some odd years of history.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most recently beloved, and it would be a shame of us to not mention this, but Love, Love, Peace, Peace, which was a interval act from the Stockholm contest in 2016. An incredible duet between the two hosts. So Måns Zelmerlöw and Petra Mede singing about how to create the perfect Eurovision song.
And an incredible show, too, because it's about creating the perfect performance, too.
Absolutely. What gets people engaged? What gets people excited? How can we possibly make something eye-catching and crazy and fun in a 3-minute performance?
Mm-hmm.
And they encapsulated it in such an incredible way.
Including Alexander Rybak on the violin.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, they brought back stars for this, of the Eurovision sphere. And people and people impersonating the stars too. It was so great.
It gets better every time.
That has to be absolute peak interval act. that's got to be the number one.
And the thing was that it did a lot about talking about Eurovision itself, mm-hmm. while being of good quality, too. A spoof song shouldn't be that good of quality. It really shouldn't.
Yeah, they were punching really, really high.
Yeah.
So I think when it comes to the referential Eurovision songs, or Eurovision interval acts, I should say, that's Create the Crop right there.
It works because it's become like a term that we use too. Like how Denmark this last year was a Love, Love, Peace, Peace song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It's very, you know.
Quite literally.
It really was. Yeah. It was called Love is Forever.
No
match for peace.
Yeah, no match for peace though.
It's implied.
Some of it was in French. There might have been something.
Yeah. So when we look at the sort of quote unquote cultural side, we are often looking at maybe a local folk orchestra or a tour of the city or a tour of the country that's hosting. But oftentimes it's just showing what is on the charts of that country outside of the Eurovision sphere. In 1997, when Ireland hosted it again, Ronan Keating was the host of the show, but he also served as an interval act because he was a member of the massively popular pop group Boyzone.
That's right. Boyzone, the zone of boy.
Or calzones made by boys.
Yes.
Made from boys.
Served to you. New from Pizza Hut. $5.99. The Boyzone. I don't want it. I will not order it. So who is Boyzone? Would Americans at all know who these...
I think
these young punks are.
I mean, if you are of a certain age, again, this is 1997, so the height of boy bandery.
Boy bandery.
Yeah.
Slightly after Pet Shop Boys.
Yes, so significantly after Pet Shop Boys, analogous with Backstreet Boys.
Sure, yes. A lot of boys.
A lot of boys.
A lot of boys.
Just boys. Just
boys.
Everywhere. Just all over.
Yep. Too many.
Too many boys.
Boys.
Too many boys.
But, like, this was a... Were they as huge as, say, the Backstreet Boys? Analogous.
In Ireland and the UK? Yeah, approximately. And Ronan Keating especially. So these guys were huge.
This was them going for the youth TV crowd.
This was sort of like... They had already captured the youth and TV crowd. They hosted it in 97. They had
by winning it 5 times within the past 10 years? Like,
in Ireland or Boyzone?
Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah,
not Boyzone. Yeah. Well, Boyzone wins Eurovision 5 times in a row.
Subject of John Irving's beloved novel, A Prayer for Rowan Keats.
That's a reference right there. You could tell we're quiz bowlers.
That is as deep as we like to dig for a reference.
Yeah.
Everyone down the reference hole.
But yes, yeah, so looking a little bit less Ireland and UK centric.
Sure.
We look at the 2001 Interval.
Yes, we do. All right.
Eric, you want to take this?
Yes. So picture this, if you will. Oh, the year is 2001. I'm about to graduate from high school.
A Beautiful Mind has just come into theaters.
That's right. And Eurovision is in Copenhagen, Denmark. Following the Olsen Brothers win in the year 2000. With a song called Fly on the Wings of Love, which makes me...
How did they record this song in between filming Holiday in the Sun? I have no idea how they did it.
I don't know.
It took a New York minute.
That's sure. Okay. Tell me, please, bring me back to Copenhagen, please.
Okay. In 2000, the Olsen twins won with Fly on the... The Olsen brothers...
No, I'm not.
The Olsen brothers won with the song Fly on the Wings of Love, a title so cheesy... It is also sold by Pizza Hut. And so we went to Copenhagen the following year. Was it Copenhagen?
It was Copenhagen.
Good. Thank God I was guessing. And Denmark had had a somewhat recent pop crossover star at this point, and they decided to make them the Interval Act. I am talking about Aqua. Aqua.
I'm a Barbie girl in... A Barbie world.
It's a good place for a Barbie girl to be, I think. So, during the voting, Aqua performed. A couple of things happened. Wikipedia notes that they played a medley of their singles, which I assume means playing Barbie Girl five times.
Yes.
And during this, it got a little bit blue.
Ooh.
Da-ba-dee-da-ba-dye. That there was profanity. Barbie and Ken were swearing.
Planned profanity?
I guess I don't know if it was planned, but Barbie and Ken just, like, swore at each other. And it was pretty...
Entertaining.
Pretty entertaining, yeah.
Who were the real winners in Eurovision that year? The viewing audience at home.
Yes.
I think that was...
There was a thrill,
but, like, we talked about, like, was this the last time that there was swearing in Eurovision? Probably planned. Yeah.
There were a couple of random choice words thrown around at other intervals, but I think in terms of the actual music itself, I think that's the last time we really had cussing going on. But looks like I'm going to have to pour myself into some research.
You took their chance.
If you're listening at home and know of a great swear from the last 18 years of Eurovision, we want to hear about your favorite profanities.
Send us your choice curse words to @12pointsusa on Twitter.
Just tell us your favorites.
retweet.
Maybe include context. Maybe not.
Whatever you want.
I say don't include the context. Just let us guess.
Anyway, Aqua was still a thing in 2001. This was 4 years since Barbie Girl had been released. They had released another album in the interim between 97 and 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine they remained fairly successful in Denmark, even if the rest of the world... I don't want to say stopped caring, but they stopped caring. And
yeah, sure. It's like how the U.S. stopped caring about Daniel Powder.
Wow.
I mean, everyone did.
Sure, the Powder family cares.
Some of them.
Mm-hmm.
He's still living in his mansion from licensing Bad Day for every rom-com trailer for the next 2 years. So, there's a future for every musical act out there, including Eurovision stars. You know?
Yeah.
Just find your niche.
Well, speaking of finding your niche getting a launch into stratosphere stardom, even bigger than the Daniel Powder money.
I'm terrified. What is it?
Two Daniel Powders.
Who is it?
You gotta rewind back to 1994, and arguably the biggest interval act of all time, even bigger than Love, Love, Peace, Peace. I'm talking Riverdance.
I forget about Riverdance every time until I go over to someone's mom's house and they have DVDs of Riverdance. It is uncanny. Everyone's mom seems to have a VHS or DVD copy of Riverdance. I have no idea why. When I was a kid, when I was about, 7 or 8 at the time that Riverdance was huge, I didn't know what was going on, and yet, all of a sudden, I get to be like 16, 17, I have a better awareness of the past. All of a sudden, Riverdance is everywhere. And this must have just been what it was like in 1994.
Oh, yeah.
It
exploded.
It exploded.
Yeah, there was Green Day's Dookie, and then for everyone else, there was Riverdance.
There are two genders.
And there are the twain shall meet.
So. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Was this interval act, was it just straight up Lord of the Dance, just... Was it just 10 minutes straight of Riverdance?
It was about 8.5 minutes, including a minute and a half of standing ovation. This was the global premiere of Riverdance. This was the first time that the world had laid eyes on Michael Flatley.
The Lord of the Dance.
The Lord of the Dance himself. Yeah. Which, might I add, I just found out, dude's American.
Oh.
He's from Chicago.
Is he allowed to be
serious?
A lord?
He is,
okay, he's like an alderman of the dance.
Yes.
He's a city supervisor of the dance, at best.
That's the choice Chicago.
What kind of Wallace Simpson nonsense is this?
This makes more sense. This is the first time that people were, how many dancers did we have? Typical, 20-person line?
Well, it started out with Gene Butler and Michael Flatley being the two kind of featured dancers, and then I think another 10 or so joined them, and then another 10 or 15 joined them. So you probably had a group of about 25 to 30 at the end, all Irish step dancing in perfect synchronicity. I was watching it earlier this evening. I'm not going to lie. I got a little bit choked up.
It's impressive.
It was
it
so good. I mean, and you had the music going on, and it just really, you just kind of felt your heart swell, and you knew, even if you knew nothing about traditional Irish dance, and I honestly don't, but you knew that you were watching something really, really special.
Mm-hmm.
It was really incredible, and I would say that the reaction in the hall that night was probably just as big from Riverdance as it won from Ireland winning Eurovision again that night.
They were
twice in a row.
This was the third in a row that night.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, Ireland.
Yeah.
They're just showing off now.
I know.
90s were big.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for the 94 contest. And can I just say that it's interesting how in the 90s, each Eurovision kind of had its own logo, and they're all kind of the same now, and how all of the 1990s Eurovision logos look like Sarah McLachlan album covers. That's it. That's my whole thought.
That's okay. All right.
I can't argue with that.
Look it up.
Yeah, Dublin.
World.
Yeah.
America. Whoever.
We'll put it on that. We'll put it on Twitter. We'll do a side by side. How long was the interval act then? Were they the only interval act?
Generally speaking.
Because, I mean, these days it seems like the interval act is 25, 30 minutes long. Because
there's actually a lot more stuff going on behind the scenes.
There is a lot more televoting happening.
Yeah. Yeah. You're filling up a whole bunch of televoting.
In 94, what was, that's about the right time, 92, 93, 94, for, the first time that we had semifinals and finals?
No.
Is that right?
That semifinals and finals came in a lot later. That started in 2004, I want to say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Still a lot of people.
Yeah. There were 25 countries. They had a massive amount of debuts that year. That was the first year for Estonia, Hungary, Lithuania, Poland, Romania, Russia, and Slovakia.
There were a lot of people from the Eastern Bloc.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the thing was, because they only had the one show and they had to cap it, you can only really have 25 people or 25 countries participating. So you had
were non-qualifiers even without a semifinal?
Basically, if they were kind of relegated from the previous year.
What do you mean?
If you didn't do well enough,
oh,
you were relegated the following year. So we saw withdrawals from Belgium, Denmark, Israel, Italy, Luxembourg, Slovenia, and Turkey to allow for those other countries to go in. But this is neither here nor there.
Sure.
So, at the time, this was all jury vote. There was no televote aspect to it.
In 94?
In 94, it was all jury. Televote didn't really start to trickle in until about 97-ish for certain countries. So at that time, you just had enough time to let the juries kind of crunch their numbers and call it in. Mm-hmm. Now there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, and you really do have to buy the time and extend it and extend it and extend it. Also, at this point, Eurovision's interval act is sort of becoming like the Super Bowl halftime show, in which it's becoming sort of a viewer's destination in itself. Mm-hmm. There's something...
There's a reason to stick around and not just go to the kitchen.
Right.
I mean, well... I mean, we still do, but yeah. we still keep the volume on.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I'm happy that I've got an open plan situation. I can get my tea and watch the show. So this year in 2019 in Tel Aviv, there was, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, technically 4 segments of an interval act,
yeah,
plus interviews, plus some interstitial footage, plus reprises of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
It just never freaking ended.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the switch song, which was a very much a sort of referential interval.
That's right.
So you had Conchita singing Heroes, you had Mom singing Fuego, you had Eleni singing Dancing Lasha Tumbai, and Verges Erduce singing Toy, and then everybody singing Hallelujah.
I wish they could have kept that going for like 30 more songs.
They could have just daisy chained it all the way down.
I would have loved it. Then they had Neda Barzilai, so the reigning champion, singing her next single.
Mm-hmm.
So again, sort of referential. Then you had a cultural one. So you had the Idan Rachel Project, which is a local Israeli band, performing one of their hits. And then there was the fourth interval.
The headliner, as it were.
Yeah.
And it were.
It were. And Madonna showed up. With Quavo. Yeah, Quavo.
One of my favorite things about this interval act was having the Israeli hosts just turn to the cameras and go, they said something like, and we've got Madonna! And the audience just felt like, yeah, Madonna.
Yeah. So it's like,
Madonna.
It's like, we...
She's
here.
Okay.
So... So you got your referential stuff. You got your cultural stuff.
And Madonna.
Madonna just doesn't fit into either of that. So it's like, what do we do with you?
It seemed odd. It seemed like she was a get for them. She is a get for them. She's a get for pretty much any festival or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, let's get her over here. She'll sing a song, but it's just like, you know, they're not hiring Madonna from 10 years. They're not hiring Madonna from 10 years ago, let alone 20 or 30 years ago.
Right.
I mean, we're getting 2019 Madonna.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
We got 2019 Madonna.
We sure did.
And it's like, she's not the first American interval act to come through and kind of mystify people, but back in 2016, after Love, Love, Peace, Peace, Justin Timberlake showed up.
The same show as Love, Love, Peace, Peace. They hauled Justin Timberlake in a shipping container all the way from Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. And they opened it up and he busted out with the global premiere of Can't Stop the Feeling.
It's a song that I hate anyway to begin with. A song that deserved to be relegated to the Trolls movie.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it had a connection to Sweden, because a lot of his...
Is it Max Martin?
Yeah.
Is it Max Martin? I mean, just going off of that logic, we could have invited anyone in order to come to Sweden that year. We could have invited Kesha. We could have invited, I don't know, the Beatles. The Beatles didn't write half their songs. It was Max Martin.
His previous reincarnation?
Yes.
But at least there was something connected, some tenuous connection bringing him in with Madonna.
Guess.
It's not like her new song was written by, you know, a group of, you know, Israeli singer-songwriters. It wasn't like that. So I was like, what are you doing here? It's like, good for you, we're happy to have you here, but why?
It just doesn't seem to be in the spirit of the contest. Like, I know that's coming from an outsider perspective and everything, but, like, bringing in a pop star from America to, like, debut a single seems more in interest of getting more TV viewers than conforming to the theme of the contest or something.
Yeah, but, I mean, who was... I don't know. I've been trying to wrap my brain around it since she was announced as interval act, and I don't think I can quite do it yet.
Is there, like, a Kabbalah connection? Like, no, for real, like, that's the only thing I can come up with.
That's the only thing I can think of, too, and I'm not sure if she still practices.
I don't think she does.
Honestly, it would have made more sense for her to show up in Portugal last year, because she lives in Portugal halftime.
Okay.
Like, there's at least a tenuous connection here. It's like, yeah, we found this local singer here in Lisbon.
I hear you used to do movies.
Local recording artist, Madge.
Yeah.
She goes by Madge over there. It's easier for them to say than Madonna.
So yeah, so this is one of the big questions, and it's really going to be very interesting to see what kind of precedent that sets for interval acts in the future.
Yeah, it seems like the bar is kind of high now. I mean, in Portugal, there wasn't really anything like that because it was in Portugal. You know, they didn't have the ambition to do this big contest that some places do.
They haul out the corpse of Henry the Navigator. Ooh. And everyone does like a ring around the rosy around him.
But nice. They did bring out the big guns, but only in certain specific genres. They had Salvador Sobral, so reigning champion at that time,
of course,
singing his winning song with Caetano Veloso, who is basically the absolute king of bossa nova and tropicalismo in Brazilian music. So
in
the Lusophone world, that's like getting up and singing with, you know, as big as it gets.
The Taylor Swift of whatever you just said.
I was going to say Paul McCartney, but okay.
Even him.
Yeah. The Taylor Swift and Paul McCartney together at last on the same Portugal Eurovision stage.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't believe it.
Just to speculate, I was just trying to think, do we know any Dutch musical artists, like, who's the biggest Dutch musical artist that we think, you know, maybe for this
Duncan Lawrence, of course.
Yes, good. But, like, who for this next year when we go to Maastricht? Who's going to be performing on the stage during interval?
I mean, it can go in many different ways. I know that one of the people who's stumping for Maastricht to get it is André Rieu.
Oh,
he's
okay.
From Maastricht.
Wow.
Interesting.
All right.
That could bring a touch of clout.
What kind of pull does he have?
Almost like money.
Oh, you know who it's going to be?
Who?
It's Waylon.
What? No. He's never been the same since that night.
Yeah.
Other big Dutch names, Armin van Buuren. So you get a lot of DJs and a lot of
11th president of the United States, Martin van Buuren.
Yep, those mutton chops.
He survived.
Those mutton
God.
Chops.
That's good.
Yep. So, I mean, so there are Dutch names. I mean, the Netherlands being a relatively small nation, they have a pretty decently sized footprint. This is the nation that gave the world the format for The Voice.
Oh, they did.
So they have a very deep pool of local up-and-coming talent as well as, you know, bigger names. But who knows? Who knows? And, you know, if it's Armin van Buuren, for example, or another, you know, EDM or DJ, he could collaborate with just about anybody.
I really would almost bank on him, André Rieu.
And Armin van Buuren.
One after another or
together.
Collab.
I'm thinking
collab.
Together.
Okay.
All right.
Could we see some form of the Common Linnets appear, do you think?
Maybe one of them. I don't think that the original lineup of the Common Linnets are super cordial with each other at this point.
Well, that's why I mean some form of the Common Linnets.
Okay.
I would not count on a reunion either of the 2014 iteration.
No, but I would be considering the close relationship that Ilse de Lange has with Duncan Lawrence. It wouldn't shock me if she pops up. And I do think they are working on new material right now, so the timing could be pretty fortuitous.
That would be great.
I would be thrilled.
Could we get a Duet Bob performance, perhaps?
Ooh.
I liked him.
Yeah, his song had an interval act right in the middle of it.
That's true. That's true, it did.
That's great.
I appreciate that the Netherlands has, just about every other year, sent a country act or a folk act or somewhere in that in that vein.
Yeah,
yeah. Americana, except it's Netherlandsana. Hmm. Sounds delicious.
Netherlandsana is my favorite nationalized airplane company.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yep. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Seems like everyone else is reaching for jokes on this episode, so I'm going to go
Everybody's
ahead
welcome.
And strain my shoulder right at the end.
The future's going to be interesting, guys. I really can't wait to see what's going to happen next.
I think another big, maybe not quite like Madonna tier, but I think we'll start seeing more of that.
Might get someone big, from Europe.
Or just from the U.S.
Europe has its own music. Mm-hmm. And I think this podcast has taught us that there's a lot of music in Europe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fair point, Danny.
Well, thank you. All right. I mean, that's about it for this week.
What else can we say? There is music in Europe.
Oh, thank God we found it.
Easy enough. Well, guys, thanks so much for listening again, even with the silly ending of ours.
This is a perfectly normal ending.
Some
all
people,
podcasts sound like
know,
this.
Some
one.
People just don't know how to write endings. We don't know how to write endings. So now here we are talking about endings.
That's okay.
So again, if you have any questions for us, either things that you want us to cover or, you know, other points that you want us to reference, what's your favorite interval act? Who do you think the Dutch could possibly send and foist down our throats for next year?
Tell us what we missed. We've got blind spots. We're Americans.
Absolutely. So send us an email at 12points, that's 12points, from America at gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at 12pointsUSA, also on Facebook at 12pointsUSA. I've been Samantha.
I'm Danny.
And I'm the Olsen twins. And America,
stop listening now.